Hello. 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 Hello.
Welcome to the Karen Conti Show on 720 WGN.
Welcome in, everyone. Karen Conti. Have a short show tonight, but it's going to be fast and furious. We're going to be talking about, really, our show is going to center around National Spouses Day. Today, January 26th, is National Spouses Day, and it's the day you're supposed to recognize your spouse. It's a little different than Valentine's Day, I guess, but it's just devoted to appreciating your spouse. And, you know, I guess I want to mention the whole Kobe Bryant thing. Of course, it's been all over the news today. Roger Badish reported on it. Kobe Bryant is dead. He was flying in a helicopter with his 14-year-old daughter, among other people, and it crashed, and they tragically died. And you think about a person like Kobe Bryant, who had it all. I mean, he was an Olympian. He wrote. He was a major talent in his sports field. He had four beautiful children, a beautiful wife. He was worth $600 million at the time of his death. And he had it all going for him. And it's a little fun fact that I knew from a long time ago. He spent a lot of his childhood in Italy, and he speaks fluent Italian. That was something that a lot of people didn't know about him. But I think of all those things that he has, and I think of all, you know, that, you know, when your time is here, when your time is ready, you're gone. And it doesn't matter how much money you have. It doesn't matter. And, you know, you just think about those things. And again, I think maybe the fact that I'm getting a little older, I start thinking that way. If I were to go tomorrow, you know, what would I do differently? Would I have appreciated things a little bit more? So what I'd like you to do is we're going to be talking to an expert in the field of marriage starting at about 8 o'clock. Eli Finkel is a PhD, and he's written a book called All or Nothing Marriage. And it's very interesting to talk about how the institution of marriage has changed over the years and has resulted in some good things and some bad things as far as happiness in a marriage. And I'd like you to weigh in on this. I know a lot of you out there are married, and maybe you want to say something about your spouse today. Why don't you give us a call right now? We've got 10 minutes. If you'd like to appreciate your spouse, give us a call out here, 312-981-7200, and if you want to say your name, you can say your spouse's name and give me a short reason why you'd like to appreciate your spouse today. It's nice to hear from people who are in good marriages. If you know anything about me and listen to the show, you know, I practice law, and I practice law right now in my life, mostly in the area of family law. So when I see people in marriages, it's not a good thing. And a lot of times they're very high conflict divorces. And so it's not the amicable ones that I spend a lot of time on, because those things seem to resolve themselves, rightly so, in a quicker manner. When people resolve things to, for the sake of the children and for the sake of moving on, I guess. So it's nice to hear people who want to appreciate their spouse. So please give me a call here, 312-981-7200. And my spouse is here today, Jerry. He's busy eating cookies, which were left the WGN. he's nodding, going, "Oh, yeah. I'm guilty as sin." So, you know, you don't have to say anything sappy, because I'm putting you on the spot, of course, which is what you do when you are married to someone.
Right. I could say maple syrup. That's kind of sappy, isn't it?
It is sappy. But, you know, being married is a good thing. You came to marriage late in life. I think you were in your 40s.
Yes.
When you were married the first time, and your wife died, as did my first spouse. And, you know, you kind of thought, I kind of thought marriage was something like, oh, I'm not sure I really was interested in it. But once I was married, I like being married.
I like being married, too. And I have to say, I'll be a little sappy here. I definitely married way above my station when I met Attorney Conti. Attorney's important there, because she does a lot of divorce. And, you know, if I mess up, she gives me that look like your mother used to give you when you were a little boy and you did something wrong. You know, just the eye. She gives you the eyes. Like, oh, my God, we're getting divorced. It's going to cost me everything I have.
Well, it's not the eye of just of your mother. It's the eye of your mother, who's a divorce lawyer. Do you notice how alimony sounds like all your money?
I noticed that.
But no, it's and one of the things that we're going to talk about with Dr. Finkel is that, you know, some of the things that you can do to make your marriage better are very simple things. First of all, my personal opinion is that choosing a spouse is probably the best thing to do right. I mean, I think so many people are either maybe desperate to get married because they think it's a social thing to do, or they want to get married to have children because that's on their list and on their agenda. And there's nothing wrong with that, but the problem is you need to have the right person to do that with. Otherwise, you're dealing with lots of years of very difficult co-parenting with somebody who may not be ideal to co-parent with. But I think that, you know, yeah, picking someone good in the first place is good. But I think what Dr. Finkel is going to talk about is how you have to kind of measure your expectations. And I think a lot of us who are married to people think, gosh, that person has to make me happy, and that person has to somehow make my life better, and that I have no responsibility for my happiness. It's really in your hands.
Well, I think the secret to Karen's and my marriage is very simple. Karen does whatever she wants, and I do whatever Karen wants. Works out perfectly.
Well, it's nice of you to say that. But, you know, I think that at different points in your life, you need different things. And that's another thing that I see, that that you don't, you know, it's not always the same relationship. You know, when I was younger, I was, you know, very ambitious. Not that I'm not ambitious now, but I wanted to work and work and work and do everything I possibly could to get where I'm going. And it wouldn't matter if I relaxed. But now at this point in my life, when I met you, Jerry, you're like really the king of relaxing.
Absolutely.
I mean, you are a person that knows how to sit down and really relax and read a book or watch television and really enjoy the time spent doing nothing, which is really hard for me. And you kind of taught me how to do that.
It's part of being Italian.
I'm not going to talk about you being an Italian loafer. No. Hey, wait. No, I don't want any bad, nasty calls or texts, because we're both Italian, so we can both say that.
Yeah, that's right. We'll make you an offer you can't refuse.
That's right. But I do think that expectations are important, and that sometimes you have to take control of your own happiness. And I think Dr. Finkel will tell you a great analogy he makes, and I think it's someone who he quotes in the book, but he talks about how if you want to play the violin, right, you want to be a really good violinist. And you say, you know what, I'm going to wait for a really good violinist, a violin to come by, and then I'll buy it, then I'll become a violinist. Well, that's not the way to go about a good marriage. A good marriage is working on yourself. It's working on playing the violin before you meet the violin that you're going to buy, because you want to be the best person you can be, so that when you're in this relationship, you're giving and you're getting, and the person who you're with treasures you and values what you bring to the table. And I think we're going to hear Dr. Finkel talk about that, and hopefully we'll gain some knowledge. But it's so interesting. The phones are dead. No one wants to say anything about their spouse. Jerry, what do you make of that?
Well, after what you just said, I wish you would have told me that I could have played a bunch of violins before I got to you.
Yes. Well, before we take a break, I wanted to, there was a really funny news story that brings me to the conclusion that we should all be eating our fruits and vegetables. A woman, 76, fell from her 7th floor Manhattan apartment. She was 76. She broke some bones, but she did not die. She did not have any brain damage or head injuries because she landed on a box full of vegetables and fruits on the sidewalk. So this is the moral of the story. Take care of yourself and make sure that you're always surrounded by fruits and vegetables. Does that make sense? All right. And when we come back, we're going to be talking to Dr. Eli Finkel, and we're going to talk about National Spouse Appreciation Day and, more importantly, what makes a good marriage and what makes a happy marriage, what makes a sad marriage, and we're going to give some examples of how to make your marriage better. This is Karen Conti on WGN. Today, January 26th, is National Spouses Day, a day to recognize and appreciate your spouse. And in honor of that, joining me is Chicago's premier expert on the issue of marriage, Dr. Eli Finkel, is a PhD social psychology professor at Northwestern University and the author of a best-selling book, The All or Nothing Marriage, How the Best Marriages Work. He publishes and studies the interpersonal attraction, marriage, and conflict resolution. Hi, Dr. Finkel, how are you?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for joining us and hanging in here with the sports delay. But let's get right into it. Let's talk a little bit first about the history of marriage and why marriage has evolved into a different kind of institution than it was, say, 200 years ago.
Well, a couple hundred years ago, marriage was life and death. We have this idea that, well, somebody kisses somebody goodbye and they go off to work. But the idea that we, like, went off to work in a corporation or a factory or something didn't exist 200 years ago. You and I worked together to try to get our farm to produce enough food to feed us and feed our kids. And it was dangerous. People died in childbirth. People died of all sorts of diseases. There were problems with locusts. So the marriage used to be about survival, and now it's about a whole lot more than that.
And what is it about now? And like, let's just maybe take the last 50 years and how it's evolved even in the last 50 years.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, eventually what happened is people decided that they wanted to start marrying for love. And, you know, as people moved to cities, they had independence of their parents, and they increasingly did move for love. That was even 150 years ago. But eventually, in the 1950s, they thought they had totally solved the problem, that they had this total love-based marriage, and they were allowed to make their own choices. And they thought they had reached the end of marital history, and then they turned out to be pretty unhappy about it. And they figured out that love really isn't enough anymore.
So what is enough currently?
These days, we still want to love our spouse, of course. I mean, very few of us would be willing to marry somebody that we don't love. But now we want a sense of personal growth, a sense that our spouse is making us feel authentic and really bringing out the best in us. And so really, it's only been in the last 50 years, and especially the last 20 or 30 years, where it's not strange to hear somebody say, look, David's a wonderful man and, you know, a good parent, but I feel totally stagnant and I'm not growing at all as a person, and I'm not going to stay in a marriage like that for the next 30 years of my life.
Is it the right way to think that your spouse is responsible for your growth, or is there some idea that we should all be responsible for getting enough of those things that we need, whether that's education or experiences and traveling and friendships, companionship? Are those things that we should look to our spouse to have that happen?
Well, yes and no. So your instincts, I think, are good. That look, we are ultimately responsible to a large extent for our own personal growth, our sense of happiness, our sense of fulfillment. But we'd be in denial to say that, you know, the person we marry or our social life more generally, that those things are unimportant in determining a meaningful and happy life. And look, we've tacked on a lot of expectations for this one relationship. It used to be that the whole village provided these sorts of things, and now in terms of our social and emotional needs, we really look to our spouse more than anybody else. The question of whether that's good or bad, the answer really is it depends.
Yeah.
If the marriage can deliver, like if you're one of those people who really is compatible from the start and investing heavily in the relationship, you can have the level of marital fulfillment that really was out of reach in an era where people weren't even shooting for a connection like this. But at the same time, a level of fulfillment, a totally adequate level of fulfillment, maybe for our grandparents or our parents even, a lot of us are actually dissatisfied with that. So it really depends. If you're asking a lot of the marriage, if it delivers, it's great, but it's a whole lot harder to get that sort of delivery.
So dual income marriages, I mean, you see the struggle that women and some men undergo. You know, they want to have children. They want to raise the children correctly. They want to hover over their children and micromanage lives, as we know this going on right now.
Yeah.
But both parents, according to the law, and both parents, according to society, are responsible for their children's happiness and to contribute to their well-being as far as financial. So it pulls people in the two directions. You know, they're both working in a lot of cases, not all cases, and they both are taking care of the children. Let's talk first about how does the dual income family, how did that whole development of the dual income family affect marriage in the long term? And then I'm going to ask you, how do children coming into the marriage affect the marriage generally?
Yeah, well, the dual income The dual income family thing. So really what we're talking about there, as I'm sure your listeners understand, is, you know, for ever since industrialization, so mid 1800s, men were going off to the workplace. But for a while there, especially if you look at 1950s, you know, the ideal was that the woman stayed home and the man went off to work. And so the dual income household is the one in which the woman also works. And I think it had two major effects that push in different directions. One major effect that I don't think we appreciate enough is that now men and women have a much greater ability to understand each other's daily experiences. You know, in an era where I go off to work and, you know, deal maybe with office politics and the stress of trying to be the sole breadwinner while you're dealing with three, you know, screaming children, you know, we come home at the end of the day and surely we can cherish each other and love each other, but it's pretty hard to understand each other. And so I think that's a real benefit of the dual income family. On the other hand, with two people, especially if they're trying to maintain meaningful careers, it's pretty hard to find the time and the effort to invest in the relationship. So on the one hand, you might actually have more in common, more to connect over. On the other hand, the demands just get to be more and more substantial because the kids still need to be raised. Plus, there's your job. Plus, there's my job. We're both exhausted. Who's going to do the stuff at the end? So again, I think it pushes both directions, but it is a big challenge.
We're here with Dr. Eli Finkel, who is the author of The All or Nothing Marriage, How the Best Marriages Work. If you're interested in this topic, read the book. I read it briefly the last couple of days, and it's just a fascinating study on how the best marriages work. And when we come back, we're going to be talking about how to make your marriage better. You're going to stay in your marriage. You want to stay in your marriage, but how to make it a little bit better so that both of you are happy. Stay tuned. This is the Karen Conti Show on WGN.
Marriage is about growing old together. Marriage is about falling apart at the same time. That's what makes it special. You live long enough, the two of you become one good person. You become one. One can see, one can hear. One can walk, one can use their hands. You need each other. You have to go to movies together. One listens, one watches.
Okay, so we have Sinbad, one of my favorite stand-ups, talking about marriage, and we're here with Dr. Eli Finkel. Now, you know, things are funny, obviously, because there's a little truth to them, but when you're
right.
When you're listening to those comments, what rings true to you having studied marriage?
Oh, I mean, I never realized what an astute philosopher Sinbad was. I mean, I think he's spot on. I mean, he's joking about the example of the movie with one person seeing and one person listening. But the broader point of the two of us, when we really tie our life together like this, actually become a single unit, that is an extraordinarily deep and important insight. And the way to think about it is, for example, let's say I set a goal to start losing weight. Well, if my wife is stocking the cabinets with Doritos, it's going to be hard for me to do it. So in a very real way, the two of us make up a single unit. And sometimes the unit, like you can imagine two gears, right? And sometimes you can imagine that the gears just go together and the machine operates smoothly. But sometimes the gears start to catch. And what I'm trying to do is incompatible with what you're trying to do, or you're helping me in ways that are just infuriating me, or vice versa. And so I think Sinbad is exactly right, that over time we actually grow into a unit, and it's really that sense of being a unit that can help determine how well the marriage is ultimately functioning.
You talk in your book about how when something happens in your marriage, when there's a little spat, and say it's something that your spouse does that just irritates you, that there's a kind of an out-of-body experience that you recommend.
Yeah.
I call it out-of-body. It's more like a third person. So could you give us an example of that? And actually, let's do Sinbad picking up his shirt, because this is the issue of him liking to drop his shirt exactly where he takes it off, as
yeah.
some men like
sure.
to do. Okay, let's listen to it.
He's messy. Okay, that's a woman's, what do we mean messy? My shirt's on the floor? Did the house fall down? Did the children die? Did the day go on? Does he work? Does he have a job? Leave the shirt on the ground. It ain't your shirt. Why are you stalking him around the house, following him? That's his clothes. Those are not your clothes.
Okay, so your husband throws the shirt down and it really angers you. So in your view, what is it that you can do to make yourself happier about the situation?
Well, I mean, broadly, there's two options. The first option is to try to communicate, ideally without any profanity, that this is frustrating for you, that you understand that he might be messier than you are, but the two of you are sharing a space, and you'd like to try to at least ask him to meet you somewhere in the middle. But I think you're pointing to a broader issue, which is that our objective circumstances are often out of our control, but our experience of those circumstances is often within our control. And so the study that you mentioned, that this is one that we ran at Northwestern with a bunch of married people from the Chicago and Evanston area, is we ask people to think about conflict in their marriage, which all of us have, but from the perspective not of their own vantage point, not through their own eyes, but from the perspective of a neutral person who wants the best for everybody. Now, each individual will have to pick who that is. It could be your brother, it could be, you know, a parent-in-law or a best friend or whatever it is, but what happens is when you see things through your own eyes, it's easy to get caught up in the righteousness of your own perspective and quite difficult to find the value and perspective of the other person. When you step outside yourself and try to see things from a third-party perspective, you can actually make yourself get a little bit less angry about what's going on and know that you've also played some role in the conflict, and it can be beneficial for the marriage.
So in the case of this, like, you might say, well, he's a hardworking man, and he's tired at the end of the day, and, you know, it doesn't matter as much to him, and he put it down there, and really, in the grand scheme of the world, you know, does it really bother me that much? And if it bothers me, I'll pick it up and put it where I want it. Right? Is that kind of the thought?
Honestly, yes and no. I mean, you know, look, Sinbad is certainly onto something important there, which is, you know, these things, we have control over these things, and what in the grand scheme of life is the big deal if there's a shirt on the floor or if I have to do a little bit of extra cleanup and so forth. But the reality is people fight about these things not for nothing. Right? They fight about these things because, first of all, it's frustrating. Some people are cleaner than others. Some people are messier than others. But I think more to the point is we fight over things that are symbolic. And so that shirt
That's
on the
true.
Floor,
yeah,
the shirt on the floor often isn't about the shirt on the floor. It's about the fact that, look, if you loved me, then you would understand that this is important to me, and you've done this 33 times, and I've had to ask you, and I feel like every time you throw a shirt on the floor, it means it's a big, you know, an insult to me personally. And so navigating that, which is something that every couple has to deal with to some extent, is important. So if it were up to me in that situation, I would talk to Sinbad rather than his wife, and I would say, dude, pick up your shirt. But every once in a while, we harp on something and overinterpret the significance and view it as a personal slight against us when it really isn't. And in those situations where the amount of effort is huge, or the amount of incompatibility on some little issue actually tends to be very large, then yes. Reorienting our own thinking about it is the best solution.
And, you know, just a very personal example I'm going to give is, you know, I'm widowed and I'm remarried. And, you know, my husband, you know, he's flipping over in his sleep and maybe sometimes keeping me up. And I was getting irritated one evening and I thought, I have a husband who's alive. I have a husband who's sleeping in bed with me. What am I getting angry about? Like, first of all, you can't help it. But like, you know, you have to put things in perspective, and your expectations sometimes need to be lowered. And I don't know how they get so high all the time, because maybe you think that your spouse is going to be the perfect person because you see that on television and you know, you're told that this is going to be the person who does everything for you. But I do think your book kind of talks about how you can adjust your expectations.
That's true. Well, not all of us see our spouse on television, so some of us may be luckier than others. So yes, you point to, I think, a fundamental issue, which is to a large extent, our happiness is about our expectations. Obviously, what actually happens also matters, but we have an enormous amount of control over how we choose to view our circumstances. Now, you had a very sobering thought, which is, look, I have a husband, and he's generally and genuinely a good man, and he's in a bed with me, and I'm grateful. And you have experience knowing that there is an alternative that is much worse than that.
Why
is it that it's so much worse? I mean, yours was particularly difficult, but look, all of us can point to the circumstances that, like, look, is it that big a deal? The shirt's on the floor. You showed up late again. Like, that's usually what people are fighting about. And these things are frustrating. They are annoying. They keep us up at night and all those sorts of things. But you're right that to the degree that we can keep our eyes on the big picture, we will usually find ourselves being much happier and, frankly, a better and more supportive spouse. I should say there will be occasions when the emphasis on the big picture will actually help sensitize us to the fact that the problems in our marriage really are major, right, when we think about it. And that's useful insight, too.
And I'm going to do one more Sinbad just because he's like teaching me everything I know other than what Dr. Finkel here is teaching me. But this is an age old problem with giving gifts. And I think in your book, Doctor, you have a little instance of that where your wife maybe was expecting a Valentine's present.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So, but this is Sinbad's read on it. Let's do that. It's the last one.
I want romance. I want, could you read those books? How to make love last forever. How to have romance forever. Too much work. Just say what you want. You got a man always forget your birthday? Forget that. Buy yourself a car. Look what you got me. He'll remember next year. I'll never forget your birthday again. That one cost me a lot of money.
Okay, so you know, that sort of illustrates what we're talking about. There's a concept in your book you call love hacks. Can you explain what that is and explain how you can implement this in a relationship?
Yeah, so people often talk about, are people asking too much of their relationship? I mean, we've actually been hinting around that issue as well. And a lot of people are making the case, and very smart people, highly educated people, are making the case that we're asking too much. And actually, when I set out to write the book, that was what I thought I was going to conclude. But the reality is, high expectations are good if we can meet them, because, like I said before, they can put within reach a level of connection that was unavailable previously. So the idea is you can ask more of your relationship and you got to invest a lot, or you can say, look, I'm going to lower my expectations. I don't expect everything. And that's the second option. But there is this third intermediate option, which is, are there ways that we can just think about things a little bit more constructively? And some of your listeners might be familiar with the idea of a life hack. The idea is, are there sort of quick and dirty things we can do to just make life a little bit more efficient, a little bit more effective? Are there things we can do in our relationship that can help us do what the novelist Marcel Proust says, you know, mystery is not about traveling to new places, it's about looking with new eyes. So are there things that we can do to just reorient our thinking a little bit? They don't take much time to do. We don't even have to coordinate with our partner, but they can actually, again, they won't make a terrible relationship a great one, but they can make a decent relationship a little stronger.
And we only have just a few minutes left, maybe not even a minute, but like, give us an example, a concrete example of a love hack.
So we have control over how we interpret events, right? So your partner shows up late, your partner does something inconsiderate, your partner makes an impolite joke at a party. We get to choose what his or her motives were. Why does he always show up? Why does he always drop? Why does he always drop his shirt on the floor? It's because he doesn't love me. It's because he's an inconsiderate bastard, right? These are things that we are allowed to choose to think. We are also allowed to choose things like, obviously, he didn't mean to hurt me. He has a long day. He gets home. He's tired and he forgets. And the truth is, the difference in the quality of those two marriages, objectively the same, but where we're thinking about them in a different way, that difference is enormous.
We are out of time, and I just want to thank you so much for joining us on National Spouses Day. Please read the book, The All or Nothing Marriage, How the Best Marriages Work, Dr. Eli Finkel. Where can they buy your book?
I think they can buy it anywhere, Amazon or a bookstore.
Okay, if we still have bookstores. Thank you so much. Enjoy your weekend. I appreciate your time. When we come
Thanks
back,
for having me.
We're going to be taking your legal calls here, 312-981-7200. This is the time to call. We have 30 minutes to get your legal calls in tonight, 312-981-7200, or text to that same number. And any question you have about anything you've seen in the news, if it's something that's going on in the impeachment or the Harvey Weinstein trial, give me a call here. I'll try to answer it as best I can. Or if it's your own personal legal matter, I'd be happy to weigh in. 312-981-7200. And let me give out my office number. If anyone would prefer to call me at the office or to email me, that those numbers would be 312-332-7800. Or better yet, send me an email with all the details at wgn@askkarenconti.com. One of the things, a couple of things I want to talk about while we get your calls coming in is, I had a lot of questions about debt consolidation and are those companies good? I know a lot of people in the new year are trying to remedy maybe some bad credit or they've got credit card debt. They're thinking about bankruptcy and their debt consolidation companies can be good. Many of them don't really do what they need to do, and it may put you into a worse position for one reason or another. I'm not going to go into all the details. Some of them make you stop paying your bills to the point where it gets worse and worse and worse, and then you can negotiate your bill down, but that doesn't always work, and that could make your credit even worse and the situation even worse in the long run. So I can't name each all of them and tell you which ones are the good ones, but there's one place that you should go. There, I have a list of either they're either free or they're at a reduced rate, and these are credit counseling organizations in the Chicago area. I have a list of them that I can email to you, and I've been doing this to people because they obviously are very interested in doing them. A lot of them, like I said, they're free, so you come in there with your bills, and they try to counsel you on what to do. They may try to counsel you to filing bankruptcy. They might want to see you do this debt consolidation, but at least you have a list of them so you can try to tap into those resources. So if you want to email me at askkarenconti@askkarenconti.com. I'm happy to email that to you. I'll just shoot an email right to you, and you can take it from there. It has links and phone numbers and addresses in many of the neighborhoods in Chicago. I think there's a few in the suburbs as well. The other thing that I've been sending to listeners is I have a little note about how to get your legal affairs in order. And that's not just because we're all going to die someday, but it's just to have it all in one place. And it's a list of items that you should have, including insurance policies, bank account numbers, passwords, social security numbers, lists of people to contact, and all of those types of things. But it's a very comprehensive list that I put together over the years, and I'm emailing it out to anyone who wants it, so you can maybe, that'll be a start of something you can do new in the year to kind of put your affairs together. And again, this is not really just preparing for your death, although this would help in the event of your disability or death, but it would be helpful just to have all this information in one place so that when you're conducting your business in the future, it's all very easily accessible. And again, you can email me at wgn@askkarenconti.com. I think Ben may have had a legal question for me.
Maybe? Yeah.
Oh, here we go.
This one, actually, I had a caller call in, but he couldn't stay on the line. And he was wondering, Karen, after the tragic events today with Kobe Bryant, he was wondering, you know, so many times you hear about somebody suing over a used car or, you know, a vehicle, well, lemon laws, stuff of that nature. Does that ever happen with aviation equipment, airplanes, helicopters? Could this be a situation where somebody's going to sue over, you know, malfunction of equipment or something of that nature?
There are people, there are lawyers who devote their professional lives to aviation law, right? And we have a bunch of really good ones here in Chicago, including Bob Clifford, who is one of the best in the nation. And what they generally do, from my understanding, is they will wait because the federal government will do a very thorough examination of what's going on. Is there a black box? They will examine all of the evidence, and they will take all the pieces and they'll put them in a room and they'll have all their experts come out there because they're very interested in getting to the bottom of why there was this crash. You know, was it, like you say, a malfunction of equipment? Was it just weather? You know, what actually happened? Was it pilot error? What can we do to prevent these in the future? So the government will do that first, and then the personal injury lawyers, which, you know, again, these are people who know aviation law and aviation structure and equipment almost as well as some of the engineers. Some, in fact, a lot of them do have backgrounds in engineering. And they will come with their experts and they will pore over the reports and then have a look at it themselves. So they will not only see the reports and talk to the federal government who's done the research, but also get a chance to look at it again. And so what happens normally is that people get sued. I mean, it could be that it's determined that it was a weather issue. It could be determined it was pilot error. It could be determined that it was a malfunction of some equipment. It could be that it was the company who made the helicopter. It could be a parts manufacturer. It could be failure to maintain. It could be a number of things. And so, generally speaking, the person who ends up dying in this, you know, he didn't do anything wrong. So it's just a matter of who's at fault. And someone was at fault. There's no question that there will be a payout. And in case of Kobe Bryant, because he was such a high income earner, his, you know, the amount of money that he would and his family would receive, and he's got young children. My understanding, he's got like a 17-year-old, a 14-year-old, a younger daughter, and one that was just born last summer. So there's a lot of kids to raise. And again, just because he's a wealthy man doesn't mean that he wouldn't have earned money to support his family over the years. So, and again, there are, I guess, nine in total who died. So this is a big money situation, and insurance companies are going to be involved, and reinsurers are going to be involved, because you have basic insurance, then you have insurance over that. And so we're going to see probably a lot of people and a lot of companies being brought into this lawsuit, and the case may go for years on this, or it could be settled if, you know, if it's determined whose fault it was on an immediate basis. But yes, that's a good question. And these things are, you know, they're very labor intensive for the lawyers and the experts. But generally speaking, the good part of it is that we get to the bottom of it, which is important, because you can't make these people come back to life with all the money in the world that the lawyers can get. But it does sometimes benefit the industry in the future, because we see that maybe industries change, and we see better secure devices, and we see better maintenance, and we see better pilot training because of the problems that we don't want to have all over again. But give us a call here, 312-981-7200. I had a call last week from somebody who said that he was having, his church was having a Super Bowl party, and they were going to charge $50 a person to get into the Super Bowl party. And he asked me, could he get in trouble? Could the church get in trouble from the NFL for the use of the name and for charging? And it's an interesting question. Frankly, the NFL would prohibit the church even from paying $50 for admission. That would be a no-no, because that is capitalizing on the word Super Bowl and the names of the teams, etc. The law and the rules have said that, well, you can have a party and you can ask people to donate to your charity while they're watching the game, but you can't ask for admission. Two different things. Okay, so and if it were non-monetary, so for instance, we've seen the churches that put on the Super Bowl, SOUP, you know, people come and they bring food for the food pantry, that would be fine. But charging admission would probably be something, if the NFL knew about it and if the NFL's lawyers were attuned to it, they could tell you to cease and desist, and it could be a problem. You know, the NFL is very protective of its rights, and it sounds like a little overkill to most people, but I think that they want to protect the integrity of the name of the Super Bowl, because everything is worth so much when it comes to the Super Bowl, including the commercials. I had a call last week, and actually several calls, and I think sometimes in the January I get a lot of financial issues. People are really trying to rectify their situation and trying to make good and get their finances in order, which is really a good thing to do, and make that your New Year's resolution, even if you're starting a month late here. But he had an issue where he owed a lot of child support. It was something over $50,000. And you know, my advice to you and my advice to everybody out there is that owing child support is a very serious matter. First of all, it's wrong. You were ordered to pay support. You should be paying support from a moral standpoint. There's no excuses for that. If there are excuses, you were sick, you lost your job, you have issues that require you that you can't pay your support, then you probably should have gone into court and asked the judge to reduce your support or to abate it for a while you got yourself on your feet. But you didn't do that. I know it's hard, because when you're not working, it's hard to hire a lawyer to pay a lawyer to do that. But it is a serious matter. You can be held in contempt. You can go to jail. They can take your assets. They can take your IRS refunds. They can take away your driver's license. They can do a lot of things. So you really need to get this in order. It's worth it to consult with a lawyer. You find out exactly how much you're owed. Sometimes the lawyer can help you with that. And make a plan to reduce support. Maybe your lawyer can go into court and maybe negotiate something with your ex to pay a lump sum that you can borrow from somebody, or to make payments over time, because the interest is incredible. It's 9% interest every time you don't pay your child support. So this is worth it to get this in order. And if you work it out with your ex-wife or your ex-husband, that's something you can do, but it needs to be put in writing. If she says, it's okay if you pay me, you know, 50 cents on the dollar, that's not what the judge is going to do unless it's in writing and it's in a court order. So make sure you hire a lawyer, or at least you go into court and get that order. Again, 981-7200, or text to that number. I'll be happy to answer your legal questions. Who wants to play my weekly news quiz? If you do, quickly give us a call here and I'll get you on the air and we'll play. It's fun. It's about the news of the week. 981-7200, 312-981-7200. Or if you have legal questions, I'm still taking your legal calls. I have a texter from, I don't know where he's from, but he says that when my grandmother died, my mother and aunt each took what they wanted. Now my mother wants a statue that my aunt got to go to a museum. Does she have a right to it? They are in Wisconsin. Okay, so there's a bunch of things I don't know that I would need to know. First of all, was there a will? And if your grandmother had a will, did it specify who is getting these pieces of property? If that's the case, and the aunt took something, and the mother took something, and now the aunt took something and it was equal value to what the mother took, she probably gets to keep it. And if the fact that mother wants the statue to go to a museum probably has no impact. I don't see how your mother is going to have any right whatsoever to dictate that something goes to a museum. If anything, you have a right to split up the stuff. You have a right to have the stuff. You have a right to sell the stuff and split the proceeds. But to say it goes to a museum is something that, unless that was specifically in a trust or a will and that language was in there about that particular item, I don't think that she's going to have a right to do that. Again, not sure exactly all the facts there, but I have to say, please, please, if you do anything this year, get an estate plan. If you need a lawyer, give me a call. I don't do this myself, but I have people in different lawyers in different areas in the Chicago area, all different levels of income, and you can get it done, and you should get it done to make sure that everything is taken care of. Let's go to Kim. Hi, Kim. Welcome to the show. You have a question about child support.
Yes, arrears?
Yes.
How does it work if the non-custodian owes arrears but they're receiving Social Security?
Okay. What kind of Social Security is it, Kim? Is it disability, or is it because the person's over 65? Or
I would like to say disability.
Okay. Now, normally speaking, when you're on disability, and again, I don't know the exact numbers on this, but when you're on disability, a portion of that should go to your child. So, like, if there's a check for $900, they have a piece of it that goes to the dependent child. So that's something that you should look into, because if your ex is on disability, he should have reported that to the disability people, and that should automatically be going to you if you are the custodial parent. Okay? And if you want some more...
This is arrears.
Okay. This is arrears. Then what you might... Then what you probably have to do is figure out how much that is and to see if you can tap into that. So you know what I'm going to have you do? I'm going to have you email me at the office, and I'm going to give you... There's a link that I have that will help you on this. Okay?
Okay.
All right, Kim. And I'm going to give out the number here and put you on hold. The number at my office is 312-332-7800. And it's the email address, which is even better, is wgn@askkarenconti.com. Okay. Let's go to the quiz. Is this Donna?
This is Donna.
Hi, Donna. Are you ready to play the weekly quiz?
I'm ready.
All right. Here we go, and all of this is based upon the news of the week. All right. A Federal Express driver was recorded doing this at a woman's home in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. A, opening the package and using the electric toothbrush that was inside. B, shoveling her porch. C, saving the homeowner's dog from a coyote attack. Or D, putting on makeup in the reflection of the blacked-out window.
Shoveling her porch.
That is true. Melvin Marlett, a 23-year-old driver, saw that there was snow on the porch, and he thought he'd give Jody LaFran a little bit of help, and he shoveled her porch. Isn't that nice? Maybe you can come over and shovel for me, Melvin.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Chief Justice Roberts is now presiding over the impeachment trial. He admonished the parties, both parties this week, the Democrats and the Republicans, not to engage in pettifogging. What does it mean to pettifog? A, to obscure the truth through word games. To B, quibble about petty points. C, distort another person's claims by mischaracterization. Or D, use too many words and with too much time to make a point.
D.
That is incorrect. It is B, to quibble about petty points. Yeah. So you see if you can use that word in your vocabulary this week.
Mm-hmm. That's a new one for me.
That's a new one. Pettifog. Yeah, pettifog. All right. This week, astronauts did this for the first time in the zero-gravity International Space Station. A, had an aerobics class. B, baked cookies. C, conducted a blood transfusion of a monkey. Or D, changed a baby's diaper.
B.
B, baked cookies. And it was, do you know what kind of cookies?
No, I don't remember.
Chocolate chip cookies. There you go. There you go. Very good. You're doing well. You're doing well, Donna. Donna, where are you from?
Hayward, Wisconsin.
Where's Hayward?
Up near Duluth.
Oh, okay. How far is that from Chicago? About?
About 500 miles.
Did you get a lot of snow in the last couple of days?
Not in the last couple of days, but we've got a lot on the ground.
Okay, because I have a house in Dullivan, and we got, I think, 5 or 6 inches this weekend.
It was, yeah, no, we get about an inch every day.
Okay. Okay. It was just announced that in the summer of 2021, what artwork will be displayed at the Art Institute? A, finger painting done by world-famous geniuses. B, a sculpture made from bobby pins and hair accessories from salons around the world. C, portraits of President Obama and Michelle Obama. Or D, the artwork of a former WGN radio celebrity, Spike Odell.
D.
I'm sorry, it is C, portraits of President Obama and Michelle Obama. Have you seen these portraits, Donna? Have you seen pictures of them?
No, I haven't.
You know, I have to say, I wonder if your listeners agree, but the one of Barack is nice. It's got a lot of flowers and like grass in the background. It's kind of weird, sitting on a lawn or something. But the one of Michelle, I just don't think it looks at all like her. I think it looks... It doesn't look at all like her, but it's going to be here, not this summer, but next summer. And by the way, Spike Odell, who you probably recall from being a celebrity here at WGN for many, many years, is a fabulous artist. I follow him on Facebook. He does watercolors. He does paintings. He's really a very talented man. But no, his stuff is not going to be exhibited. All right. Britain's Prince Charles was accused this week of doing what? Causing the wax figures of Meghan Markle and Prince Harry to be removed from a London museum. B, snubbing U.S. Vice President Michael Pence at a Holocaust forum. C, calling Harvey Weinstein to wish him luck on his sexual assault trial. Or D, wearing a suit made in Bangladesh.
B.
I'm sorry. It's for snubbing U.S. Vice President Michael Pence at a Holocaust forum. Now, if you Google that online and you see him going and shaking hands, he skips Michael Pence. But the explanation was that he had just spent time talking to Michael Pence, and so he skipped him because he had already said hello. So that's the explanation. Mm-hmm. But if you look at the video, of course, it looks otherwise. All right. The Grammy Awards are going on tonight, and interestingly, what musician has never won a Grammy? A, Diana Ross. B, Stevie Wonder. C, John Williams. D, Beyoncé. Who's never won a Grammy? Diana Ross, Stevie Wonder, John Williams, who did Jaws and Schindler's List and all those movie scores, or Beyoncé?
I'm going with C.
I'm sorry. It is Diana Ross. Diana Ross has never won a Grammy.
Surprising.
That is surprising. And Stevie Wonder, by the way, has won 25 Grammys.
Mm-hmm.
And John Williams has won 24. Beyonce, 22. So there you go. Okay. Let's do one more. This animal news did not happen this week. A, a walking shark was discovered in Australia. B, Fiona the hippo in Cincinnati Zoo received a gift from her boyfriend, which was edible arrangements of fruits. Or C, 17 tigers and lions received a reprieve from circuses and arrived in a South African sanctuary. Or D, 5 koala bears were discovered in a pouch of a kangaroo in the aftermath of the Australian fires.
A.
That is correct. A walking shark was discovered near Australia. It was 3 feet long. It's not threatening to anyone, but I wouldn't go for a walk near it. Donna, thank you so much, and we appreciate you playing the game, and I hope you continue to listen.
Thank you.
All right. You take care. We're listening to The Karen Conti Show on WGN. Hello. I want to say a couple things before we sign off. First of all, I want to thank everybody for giving for calling in. I want to thank Dr. Eli Finkel, who is the author of the book, The All or Nothing Marriage. I think that would be a nice thought to say hello to your spouse in a different way with new eyes, as he talked about, and to recognize your spouse on National Spouse Day, which is today. You didn't know that, did you? You just thought Valentine's Day was coming up, but today is National Spouse Appreciation Day. One of the things that I wanted to talk about, speaking of spouses and maybe spouse that you don't appreciate, is on March 7th, if you are interested in getting a divorce or if you're in the middle of a divorce, there is a seminar that I am going to speak at that should be very helpful. It's about finances, it's about the emotions that go along with divorce, and it's about the practical aspects of and the legalities of divorce. And if you're interested in gaining some information or you have some friends who are interested in that, please give me an email. You can actually go on the site called Private Vista, and the seminar is in Oakbrook. It's March 7th, which is a Saturday, and it's in the morning at 9 o'clock. And it's a nice event. It's a small price that goes to charity, like $25, $35, I think. And I'm going to be talking about the legal issues attendant to divorce. And again, sometimes you think about getting a divorce and you don't know all of the ins and outs in it. You don't know how it affects the children. You don't know how it affects you financially. And that's something that you can gain some information. There's no obligations at all. No one's selling anything. I'm certainly not selling anything. So if you're interested in getting more information about that, you can log on to Private Vista here in Chicago, or you can email me at WGN@AskKarenConti.com. WGN@AskKarenConti.com. And I guess I want to just have one last legal question that I saw, and that is regarding shoveling. And this, I'll just end on this. The shoveling is an important thing to do. You can be cited for shoveling, not shoveling your walk. I know that we're expecting some more snow this week. And in Chicago, the rule is 7 to 7 to 10, which means you have to, if it snows between 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., you need to shovel by 10 p.m. And if it snows between 7 p.m. and 7 a.m., you have to shovel by 7 a.m. So make sure you do that. And if someone's not shoveling, you can call 311 or go to cityofchicago.org/311, and they will come out and they will probably cite you for, or probably give you a warning first before the shovel police give you a citation. You are listening to The Karen Conti Show.